Now we'll go back to, we'll go to part two. This is the broadcast 6:05, July the 11th, 1983. It's side two of the tape. If you're taping it and I'm taping the broadcast, it's KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. And I'm working my way slowly, but it's eventually to the Vicki Morgan story. One other story about the counsel who ignored the tips on the book, a Carter counsel. This person who worked for Jimmy Carter said he heard that the papers had been stolen, but he hadn't paid any attention to it. He thought it was too outrageous to be true. One of the people who was involved with the stolen papers, his name is Chuck Crawford, C-R-A-W-F-O-R-D. And this Crawford now works for a public relations firm of Robert Keith Gray. He helped with the stolen papers. He briefed the president. He knew they were stolen. He's been identified as a person who worked for the Reagan communication chief, Mr. Gray, and now he works for him in Washington, D.C. One thing about the far right is they take care of their own. The left never does as good as the right wing. They always take care of their own, and you've got to laud them for that. If you work together, we hire you, and we stay together. So Mr. Baker and Mr. Bush and Mr. Meese and William Van Cleve, C-E-L-E-A-V-E, from the Defense Department, David Stockman, Gene Kirkpatrick, James Baker, a whole lot of people, Richard Allen and William Casey, will be doing more. But that's an important thing, is how many people knew and used these papers and other papers. Goodness knows how far it goes, use them to get Reagan reelected. Remember, at the Watergate Hotel, seven people were entering the Democratic headquarters and taking papers out, and it eventually brought the scandal where the President of the United States, as I say, resigned. Here, the President is using it for his election to become President of the United States. He needs to know what he's going to be asked, so he appears to have the answers, and that is a total fraud upon the people of the United States. Now, there's a book getting into the Bloomingdale story and Vicki Morgan, a book called Make Believe, the story of Nancy and Ronald Reagan. And it's a great book. It's by Lawrence Leamer, L-E-A-M-E-R. Just came out, Harper and Row. It just came out. It not only has a great table of contents, but it's got pictures that you will enjoy for a lifetime. The governor and his lady, a gilded dawn with their arms around each other when the inauguration is over. From their Rancho to Rodeo, that's Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills. His movie International Squadron, Captain Reagan of the Army Air Corps, who never left Hollywood when the war was going on. Pictures of Reagan with Boris Karloff and with Nancy Davis and Frank Sinatra at the White House party. Mulder and Lee Annenberg, the mob king and queen. With them, Nancy sings with Frank Sinatra. Marvelous pictures. It's a wonderful book just for the pictures alone. And as I say, Frank Sinatra and with his close ties to Bloomingdale and an integral link of the Bloomingdale story, and Johnny Carson, now involved in these scandals, are in the news today. Now, there were similarities between the murder of Vicki Morgan and some of the other conspiracies. I'll just name three. One was Kathy Smith, who was on probation for drugs many times over, who was known by the police department for selling heroin and cocaine and giving it to movie people and goodness knows who else. But she was always on the loose supplying her various goodies. She left the house where John Belushi was staying, the cottage, and he had already been dead. She described the death rattle. She didn't call 911 or tell anybody at the desk. She goes away, makes a telephone call, and comes back with a spoon and with cocaine and says, "Here I am." And the police chief Cook, who's involved with the Vicki Morgan investigation, says, "Oh, that's okay, Kathy. This wasn't murder. Belushi's a slob, and you're free." Dan White took a gun, put it in his pocket, didn't go through the detectors at City Hall, went through a window in a lavatory that he knew was open, went up to the City Hall and shot the mayor, George Moscone, and then the supervisor, Harvey Milk, went down and had a hot dog, called from a hot dog stand, called his wife, went to church, walks the police department, says, "Here I am, I killed him." And they say, "Oh, here, you want a telephone, you want some food?" The shirts were made for the guards, "Free Dan White." And it was a big joke. He had done that successfully, and he was the hero of the scene. Jack Ruby did one better. He killed right on television. He didn't have to make any lies. He worked with H.L. Hunt and Lamar Hunt. He was told he would be a hero. So he just went in and right in front of the camera shot Lee Harvey Oswald. So you know there's no conspiracy because two hands weren't on the gun. That's the way the Americans think and the police work. If one man shot the gun, then only one man's involved. So here's your television. Oswald's being transferred. They announced when. They let Ruby in the jail. They know he has guns, and he's armed up to the teeth. He's made arrangements to send his dog somewhere. He's going to be out of town for a while or put up for a while. So he says, you know, like, well, here I am. And then he was arrested. The gun went off. They said, who is this? And he says, you know me. I'm Jack Ruby. And that's all recorded on tapes and things for people that want to study history. So Kathy Smith and Dan White and Jack Ruby were part of the inner team, and they didn't have to pretend what they were doing. Chivalry is not dead in two cases, if you would believe it. Jack Ruby's excuse, alleged motive at first for shooting Lee Harvey Oswald, a man who's charged with murdering the President of the United States, was that he didn't want Jackie to have the ordeal of a trial. Now, Marvin Pencoast, the fellow that didn't shoot Vicky Morgan, he didn't even do it that nice. He took a baseball bat and smashed her head open. And if it affects me, I may just keep using that phrase because that's what happened. A story from the San Francisco Chronicle this week, July the 9th, bizarre motive for killing Vicky Morgan. Marvin Pencoast said that's the frontline story. The woman had gone from $18,000 a month to absolutely zero, so he thought he was doing a mercy killing to save her poverty. Those are the two most chivalrous acts I can think of in my American history. Now, the cover story was that she was destitute. She needed money. The real story was that she was a full-time partner and had 10% of the pizza business, and we'll go into that. The difference between Judith Exner, who wrote a book on her sex exploitations with John Kennedy in the White House, and with Vicky Morgan were quite different, and the woman didn't take any courses in analysis or logic, I'm sure. Judith Exner sat down and wrote a book about her life with John Kennedy because her purpose was to smear John Kennedy. She was put in the White House by the Ronald Reagan gang, Frank Sinatra and John Roselli and Sam Giancana. She was supposed to leave her little satin panties under the pillow so that when Kennedy was dead, they would hope he would be defamed and discredited as a sleazy, oversexed president and not worthy of any tears or thought. Don't read his speeches because there's pants under the pillow. Well, in this case, she's writing a book about a man who's still president of the United States and has videotapes that they said on the news this evening. I got a call just before I came in, and the news said on KGO and ABC that it goes all the way up to the top and all the heads up to the top of the country. So this isn't a dead president. This is a living president who's fighting for his life and his reputation that's been sleazed from the word go. And she thinks she's going to sit and write a book about him. And Betsy, with Mr. Zipkin and Roy Cohn and the gang that they got, and Frank Sinatra and Marvin Davis, she thinks she's safe because Judith Exner and other women did a show-and-tell book. Well, it's not the same thing. You can write about a congressman, but certain people wanted the congressman out. That's why the books were allowed, so that the differences were pathetic. Now, obviously, the news media and the powers that be thought that there'd be a suicide note. This was a different kind of a death, and the headlines were horrendous, and we have again gone away from no more heart attack. This wasn't an apparent heart attack. It wasn't an apparent suicide. She wasn't dead from clinging her gun. She didn't die in a car crash. She didn't accidentally medicate by a depression. She didn't go up in a plane crash. I talked last week about Dorothy Hunt. She didn't have three-week cancer like Ruby or three-year cancer like Martha Mitchell. She wasn't robbed by somebody who didn't know she was for drugs. They didn't mistake the identity by the police department. She wasn't found in the woods with her pants wrapped around her legs like Kevin Mulcahy. She wasn't hanging from a bridge like Roberta Calvi. She didn't jump out the window like the secretary to Banco Ambrosiana. She was missing. She wasn't missing. She didn't seem despondent. She was moving to another place, and she was scared. It wasn't a fight of passion. He said, I don't even like her. There's nothing platonic. He said, I did it for poor Alfred Bloomingdale because she took advantage of him and even her own mother. So I had to end their misery. Alfred's been dead a year. So why does he have to kill her now? Alfred can't do anything about that. So how would he know? And she didn't fall drunk and hit her head on the table like William Holden or Charles McCabe in San Francisco. And she didn't drown with her shoes or clothes on like Natalie Wood. They are running out of styles to die. What they did was they simply clubbed her on the head. The headline says, accused killer says Morgan used people. He had to kill her because she used people, or was he serving the White House, which obviously is doing with the stories coming out. Another headline, murdered Vicky Morgan took many secrets to her grave. Hey, young ladies, if they want you for your sex orgies and parties, take note right now. And I don't think that kind of audience is listening, but be careful who you see, because sure, it goes to your grave. That's the point. You do it for their pleasure, and when their pleasure ends, or you talk, to the grave you go. Another headline, bizarre motive in mistress death, and that's the one of the mercy killing. And then the worst I saw today was the Los Angeles Herald. Why Vicky never woke up. Roommate of ex-Bloomingdale mistress admits beating her to death in her sleep. If she woke up, it would really be into the occult or ghost stories. Why she never woke up is they took a baseball bat and smashed her head open. Imagine an obscene headline, why she never woke up, and then she's bludgeoned to death. She couldn't even have a fight. There wasn't even a scratch on this guy because he decided to do it that way. Now, getting back to the point about cover stories and murders and covering them up, whether it's John Belushi or Jack Ruby or Lee Harvey Oswald or all these people, the media, certain people in the media had key stories they were going to drop about Vicki Morgan. And being as there was time running out and the scandals are breaking in Washington, they had to just bang her on the head and forget the cover stories because they couldn't conveniently get her to commit suicide. She was running away from her house. She had an overdose, as I say, on drugs. So in the Los Angeles Herald, they had a smear story, and in other newspapers too, and the stories run, and maybe you've seen them. These are some of the quotations. She was thrice married from a broken home. She had an illegitimate son. She was out of money. She was out of work. She wanted fame. She wasn't a good actress. Fame had to creep through the door by exposing Bloomingdale. She didn't have cash. She had a come down of a standard of living. She dabbled in the occult. She wanted an attorney whose wife knew astrology. She was mysterious. She was a loner. She didn't mingle with others. She went to the Lee Strasberg acting studio and never made anything of herself. She had a brief acting career, a movie that never came out. Now it'll be a multi-million-dollar bestseller. And all of this would apply if she were Lee Harvey Oswald or James Earl Ray or Sirhan Sirhan or Arthur Bremer. Because that's the script. You're a loner. You have no money. You don't like your society. She was asleep in her bed. She was moving the next day. She hadn't popped one single pill. And the Salinas, California paper, a friend called and read me the article there. He poured wine down her and got sure that she was really doused with wine. He said, I get tired of hearing her talking about these things, her complaints. So he gave her lots and lots of wine and then oiled her feet with baby oil. That's a good way to run away, too, in case your skull holds together for 1 minute. He oiled her feet and filled her with wine, and when she was sound asleep, and that was his last night because he was leaving the next day and she was leaving, she's cracked open in the head. The assailant said in all these articles, if you see it, he didn't love her. It was platonic. He wasn't sure where she was moving. As I say, he felt sorry for her mother and Alfred Bloomingdale, and he knew Bloomingdale for 4 years, and goodness knows what he was up to, and he worked at the Robert Morris Agency that hired writers and authors. And William Morris Agency, and I want to get into that a little bit, too. Vicki Morgan was scared. She called a mover, and this is a story from the LA Examiner, July the 8th. She called a company called the Elephant Movers and said she was desperate. The people said she was desperate. Somebody had left her down. She said, I have to get out the next day. She said, this is a quotation. She sounded almost desperate. I quoted a price. She said she didn't care what it cost. That doesn't sound like she's out of money. She didn't care what it cost. I told her the mileage charge. She said, it doesn't matter. The tone of her voice was, just do it. I want to get out of here. And the person at the travel at the moving agency said, people normally ask a lot of questions about mileage and so forth, but she wanted to get out in a hurry any way she could. Not one question of cost, not one question of distance. And then this man who murdered her was on the phone. He grabs the phone. And the woman at the travel, I keep calling it travel agency. She took a trip. That's pathetic. Bad joke. Okay. The moving agency, the people, the Elephant Movers, they talked to the man who was on the phone and said, where is she moving to? So they'd know how far to move her. And he said, according to the newspaper, I think she was moving to Burbank. That means he had one more night there, and then her Doberman pincher might bark, and the kid might be home, a 14-year-old kid. He might be even playing baseball with his own bat, instead of it having killed his mother. So the point is that he didn't know where she was going. She was getting out of there, and she was frantic, and he is on the line. So what does she have? Just a few more hours? They're open maybe till 4 or 5 o'clock? She only has to get to sleep, and at 3 in the morning, he goes to the police and did it. So he admitted he wasn't going to have an apartment with her. They were going to have separate apartments, and he thought it was Burbank. So she hadn't told him where she was going to go, or what part of the city, and she did have a funeral paid for by somebody, a very fine funeral, and there is money, and she had checks coming in from Fort Lauderdale. She was not destitute. So he has one night to do it, and he can't get her to write a suicide note, I guess, and she can't overdose on these various things, and she's not despondent enough to take her own life. And maybe that last night he just didn't happen to have a gun around. Maybe he thought he had more time and came home, and she's moving and calling the movers. So he only has that amount of time, if he's a hired killer, to do it, and he's got to do it. And so he oils her and winds her and puts her down. Now, the timing of the situation is interesting. I always like to put things in chronological order. It takes a lot of time, but when I'm through, it's rewarding. A book came out 3 weeks ago called Gambling with History, Reagan's First 2 Years in the White House. Gambling with History. It's like the Seymour Hersh book on Henry Kissinger and the other exposés on the Reagans coming out. It's by Lawrence I. Barrett, B-A-R-R-E-T-T. Reagan's First 2 Years in the White House, Heaven Help Us. It came out June the 8th, and in that book, he picked up a remark that David Stockman said several years ago about how they use the stolen material. Again, it may be like a Watergate, like James McCord. Stockman set the ball rolling with George Will in the far right, and this may be the Reagan Gate. They say that this will prove to Reagan that the liberals, like Mr. Baker and or Casey and Allen, are too liberal, and that you need a far right. You can't trust these middle-of-the-grounders. Okay, this book came out with the exposés that would involve various aspects of the Ronald Reagan administration. And in the book, a friend went to the library today to get the book out of the library for me. It doesn't mention Alfred Bloomingdale by name, but it does mention the Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board that Alfred Bloomingdale was on, and it does mention Richard Allen as being a consultant to that advisory board. So this book came out just June the 8th, and 3 weeks later, Marvin Pancoast, in case I haven't spelled it, P-A-N-C-O-A-S-T, he moves in with Vicky Morgan just with the time that this book on the Reagan administration is coming out, 3 weeks before her death. Now, there were charges, as I say, of sex and White House and moles and campaign information that was taken from the Carter people. But the sex videotapes that Mr. Pancoast offered his lawyer of people high up in the White House, of Mr. Bloomingdale, of a prominent businessman, of one elected person, official not from California, and three appointed by Ronald Reagan, the orgies that went on in California were infamous. And I'm sure that when you start getting this man apart, Ronald Reagan, or if you really delved into Richard Nixon with his friends B.B. Rabosa and Mr. Al Bonapper, what went on with that gang, you'd have another view of America. But thank goodness people like Mr. Barrett and Seymour Hersh are doing these books. So the stories of sex and White House mole came out. And at the same time, this past week, there's stories of the pilfered paper that involved Richard Allen, the national security advisor who worked with Mr. Alfred Bloomingdale. And he also worked on the Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board at a time when Bloomingdale, as I said before, was appointed 1 month after he went into a written business partnership with Vicky Morgan. She was much more than just a person who watched Alfie get on the backs of women while he beat them and drooled them, and men also, and had his sex orgy. She was described by her attorney as a person who worked in espionage, and we'll get to the sources of that. Incidentally, the Los Angeles Herald, September 18th, 1982, if you want to look it up, has a story about Vicky Morgan's business. She was a business partner in the Showbiz Pizza Palace, and Paul Pendergast, P-E-N-D-E-R-G-A-S-T, the vice president of Brock Hotel Corporation, who owns 80% of that place, said that Vicky owns 10%, along with Bloomingdale and a Mr. McComas, capital M-C, capital C-O-M-A-S, investment company, out of Fort Lauderdale, Florida. They're all joint owners of the company, Mr. Pendergast, Mr. Bloomingdale, and Vicky Morgan. Mr. William McComas lives in Fort Lauderdale, and he and his daughter and two men who he refused to identify are the partners in this company. Now, remember when Pete Wilson, our senator from San Diego, was caught on his energy tax matters and had tax shelters in Texas and Gardena? He had unnamed silent partners. And John DeLorean is holding up the settlement of his suit. He's supposed to go to trial. He keeps delaying it because he won't name who puts money into the Panama banks, the Swiss banks, his silent partners, and his moving around of millions of dollars. So Vicky Morgan had an income. She was a partner. She was to be paid, as I said before, $10,000 a month for 2 years, starting March 1982, to get a total of $240,000 from the profits of the Marina Bay offices in Florida jointly owned with William McConus, and the contract was signed February the 12th, 1982. And in March, Alfie, her co-partner, is on the Foreign Intelligence Board with Richard Allen. So there was a nest through the years with Vicki Morgan, Bernie Kornfield, Robert Vesco, Richard Allen, William Casey, and the whole gang. Incidentally, Time Magazine, October 14th, 1982. My good friend called me to remind me of the article on King Alfred and Queen Betsy, that he was to be called King Alfred. If she whipped the girls, if they didn't call him King, then they were to be ripped harder. He was King Alfred, and she was good Queen Betsy. I'm sorry, it wasn't just Queen Betsy. It was good Queen Betsy. Now, in September 82, the Palimony case was thrown out by Judge Christian Markey. In Los Angeles, he as much as said, "You're nothing but a common whore. You don't get a share of what you did for 14 years with him," although her attorney said she was a business partner, and they threw out a bulk of the trial. But the point is that there was still more trial to come. She was writing a book. She had a business percentage, and a trial was coming up. So why did he have to wipe her out? Well, the answer is obvious. To silence what he knew, what she knew. Pancost had these movies and these tapes and was with her just 3 weeks, supposedly helping her with her particular book. There was a story November 28, 1982, how Nancy Reagan was simply furious at Betsy Bloomingdale because she's so pig-headed that she could have stopped the entire Palimony suit if she had paid off Vicki Morgan early instead of getting into the sex acts and the drooling and the whipping and the multiple, the men, the women, and the sadomasochism and the Jekyll and Hyde of Alfred Bloomingdale. Now, this is maybe a 15, 20-year-old friendship with Reagan, and all the time he's been married to Nancy, and here's a Jekyll and Hyde on the CIA Foreign Intelligence Board. It gives you some idea of what Richard Allen and William Casey have for us and what goes on in Washington, D.C. Why can't we just get one character without the other? But he's described as this Jekyll and Hyde, and Nancy at the time was simply furious. She and Betsy are very close. Nancy had a birthday party this week, and Betsy was there with Mr. Zipkin, the walker that she passed on to Betsy, their mutual friend. Many of you remember the tape I did. I'll do more on Zipkin later. But Marvin Mitchelson, M-I-T-C-H, Mitch, Olson, E-L-S-O-N, was the attorney for Vicki Morgan when the Palimony came. He's very famous for that, trying to get money for women who've lived with very wealthy men for over 7 or 10 years. And he was called to Washington, D.C. to talk to Morgan Mason. He was a presidential aide on very important presidential affairs. This is the kind of thing the president has to do. And Mitchelson went to Washington, D.C. You may remember the story. And they were simply furious about what is going on with Vicki Morgan. Well, he couldn't back out on that case. But what he did do was he dropped her 3 weeks after the one case and left the pending case with somebody else. He took orders from the president of the United States. This is like Lyndon Johnson calling in Earl Warren and say, I demand that you have what was known as a Warren Commission investigate the president. And Earl Warren literally cried, and he said, "Were you in the service?" "Yes, I'm your commander-in-chief. You do it." He did it. The rest is history. Ronald Reagan demanded that Mitchelson, you know, take care of this matter. So he went off the case, and then the story goes on that Vicki Morgan needed money because her business wasn't going so well until the pizza sold better. So she decided to write a book and work with the William Morris Agency. Now, here's the story of the William Morris Agency, because that brings in the conflict of this particular wipeout of Vicki Morgan. William Morris Agency not only represents actors and actresses, but writers, political writers like Henry Kissinger, Alexander Haig, Gerry Ford, Betty Ford. The Reagans will get a $2 or $3 million book out of the William Morris Agency when they step out of the White House. So to glorify them, to make the agency bring in its big bucks, they have to make their heroes look better than anything in America. So William Morris Agency, she goes with her little story, "Will you get me a publisher?" And who's working at the William Morris Agency for 16 months but the fellow who's going to split her head open? That's where he worked. So at the William Morris Agency that works for the people that she has the videotapes on, she's got the goods on the Sinatras and the Bloomingdales and the Haigs and the Kissingers and all the kinky sex from coast to coast. And these people are allegedly she's going to trust to get her book out when they're going to negate all the other grandiose $20 and $30 books they're trying to get out, the coffee table books of American history. So her murderer, not her lover, worked 18 months, one story 16 months, one 18 months for the William Morris Agency. Now that is like Thane Caesar, who worked for Lockheed with the U-2 flights, coming from Lockheed, where they set up the assassination teams with Robert Mayhew and the Howard Hughes Organization and Mo Dalitz and that gang, the espionage inside of Lockheed. They send Thane Caesar to guard Robert Kennedy, the ambassador hotel. They can't have a police that night. They have to have a Lockheed espionage spy who shoots him from the back of the head. So in this case, they take a guy from the William Morris Agency. She has this suit pending. He stays away and moves in with her just 3 weeks ago, or in a short time period, not a lover, and described as a former duplicator machine operator. Now, some of the newspaper articles say he was a clerk. Some say he was a duplicator machine operator. All of that is cover story, like Watergate. It's like when Lee Harvey Oswald worked at Riley Coffee Company, they said he oiled the coffee cans. He gave him a job on the sixth floor and said, walk down to the first floor and here's the oil, grease the machines. They didn't say that Riley Coffee Company was run by Mullen Associates, which was E. Howard Hunt and Douglas Caddy and the entire Watergate team of Mr. Colson and the espionage CIA operation going back to the Bay of Pigs, that his salary comes from Washington to oil the cans. The fact that the guy worked a copying machine has nothing to do with him or about him or how he murdered her or why he murdered her, except that this man wants to be president again, and nobody in Washington, and certainly his appointees, don't want their orgies photographed. And if they destroy the films, which the attorney said he's going to do tonight, there'll be more orgies. The LAPD has orgies coming out of the walls. If you want them to order, they'll be on videotape. Some night, I predict 20 years from now, you'll sit back and watch your politicians with the sex orgies they had. I remember years ago, my grandfather used to talk about television. He said, someday you'll sit home and watch the Metropolitan Opera in your living room. And I remember the first night it was televised. I sat there crying because my grandfather had this great vision and he could see these things, and it did happen. Well, soon these will be for sale because you can't make something and keep it private. So someday we're going to show Alfred Bloomingdale and Ronald Reagan and all of them, you know, messed around. And it's on tape, and you can't erase that kind of thing. Anybody who keeps one set is silly. And who's the cameraman? You know, he kept his set in some safe deposit. So Vicky knew she was going to be wiped out. Now, she had a trial coming up. The trial was clear-cut. Casey had signed a contract with her 1 month before he was hired by the CIA, so you can't say he's senile. And another interesting story, where did she meet Mr. Pencoast? You know where she met him? In a mental hospital. They were both in a mental hospital in California. She had no symptoms of depression, but he could be programmed, just like Candy Jones was told to kill herself for the CIA down at Paradise Island. Maybe Vicky didn't cooperate. Maybe it was time to do it, and she didn't do it. The newspaper says she took secrets to her grave. But interestingly enough, Pencoast was in a mental hospital with Vicky Morgan. That's where he allegedly met her, and then goes to work for William Morris Agency, which is one of the highest agencies in the United States, right out of the funny farm into William Morris Agency. Well, our time is up. We'll have to do part two of Vicky Morgan next week because this story is not going to wash away. It is part of Americana, as I said before. In the meantime, this is Mae Bressel on KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, and you take care until next week.
The views expressed by Mae Bressel during World Watchers are those of the commentator and do not reflect the opinions of KAZU, its board of directors, or staff.